The story of manna in the wilderness is one of my favorite stories. And it's one of my favorite stories because it is a story really about how God lives out God's promises. God hears God's people complaining and responds, but maybe not quite in the way they would have wanted. As I shared with the kids, they got manna, but it was the same food day after day after day after day as they went through the desert. And soon the people groan under the weight of it. They get so sick of it. Have you ever eaten the same thing over and over again? Yeah, my doctor said to me when I was diagnosed with high cholesterol, he said, you need to eat oatmeal every day. And I did for 2 weeks. Because it's one of those things that the monotony of it starts to make you just a little batty, as it did the people of Israel. But God gave them this food for a promise. A promise that they would be God's people, that they would find their way to the promised land, that land of milk and honey. It's a strange kind of grace that God gives them. It's not what they expected. In many ways, it's not even what they wanted. And before long, they will groan again. Does quail and manna seem like a just reward for following God into the wilderness? In the same way, in our text for this morning in the gospel, one wonders whether or not the workers receive their just reward for the work that they have done. This is one of the more difficult texts, I think, in many ways in the gospel. As a matter of fact, I was sitting there, I got up Monday morning and I was doing my translation, and I kept thinking to myself, I swear I just preached on this thing. And it was dogging me, because I hate that when you have that deja vu. And so I finally got out the lectionary, and I looked down trying to figure out, now where was this text here recently? And I spent about 5 minutes trying to figure out what had happened, and then I realized, oh, it was in our Bible study that we had talked about it and argued about it. And when we had looked at this text, we realized there's kind of three ways that this text is taken. In the most traditional use of this text, it's about kind of a salvation history. That's how often the church has interpreted this text. So you're going to help me out. Who is the landowner in this text? Jean-Paul, you're never hesitant. There's no wrong answer. Wrong. Well, it's God, for goodness sake, right? I mean, in the really traditional interpretation of this text, the landowner is God, right? And who are the first workers who get called and promised a day's wages in the very traditional interpretation of this here? Bill, help me out. Wrong. Thank you. From the distaff side, in fact, it is the most common interpretation, or the most traditional interpretation. The first workers are the people of Israel, the Jews, who were called to do a certain thing and to be God's people. Who are the later workers who get called into the field? Wrong. You know, I thank you, Sue. And I thought you people knew this stuff. I'm so glad that you don't. It gives me hope that you don't know this story. In one of the most traditional ways, the Jews are the first workers who are called, and the Gentiles, the Christians, are the second ones who get called by God into the field. And when all thing comes to the end of the world, God says, let's pay the last workers first. And so the Gentiles get paid the same amount as the firstborn, the first called. That's the traditional way we look at it. And it's actually the birthplace of a type of theology that says that the Christians have essentially displaced the Jews as God's chosen people. I'm glad to see the puzzled looks. I want to tell you about that because, like it or not, that's how a good bit of Christendom sees this story. A second interpretation is a little bit more, a little different, and this was actually the one that was on one of the primary sources that I use in sermon preparation. And basically, in that story, the landowner is not God. The landowner is a rat. Yeah, he's a bugger. He's not a good man in any way, shape, and form. And what the story is really about is the fact that none of them get what they should get. And that the landowner is, in fact, a tyrant. I would propose maybe a third way to see the story. A story that is about the unfairness of God. Matthew uses this parable to talk about the kingdom of heaven. And the kingdom of heaven is like this. Each of us gets called to be a part of that kingdom of heaven in our own way, and some are called early and some are called late. Now, we have this justice doctrine of fairness, right? Whether we like it or not, if you were one of the workers who had been there all day from sunrise until the set of the sun, and you had sweat pouring down off of you, and if you've ever picked grapes, it is not as fun as you think it is. It is buggy, spidery, nasty work, back-breaking work. And when you go to get paid, and the guys who had only worked an hour came up and they received the full day's wages, what would you expect to happen? If you'd been there the whole day, you're thinking to yourself one of two things. If you're a city and county worker, you're thinking, bonus! Right? Most of us would actually think to ourselves, gosh, if he's so generous that he's going to pay them all that extra money, imagine what he's going to pay me. But that's not what happens. The owner pays them all the same. It's just not fair. At least not by our standards. Because in our standards, we should get paid more for more work. But if this is a story about God's grace, the fact that God's economy is not our economy, then maybe the story begins to make sense. Grace upon grace, not as a matter of volume or amount, but as God's transformative love. So that in our economy, Mary, who is the paragon of perfection, comes to church every Sunday, grew up in Nebraska where all of God's people grew up. And except for the ones from Iowa. And who probably, honest to goodness, goes to church while she's on vacation. Shouldn't she get more credit in heaven than someone like me? I will confess, when I'm on vacation, I rarely go to church. It's horrible, isn't it? You know why? Because I always have a bad experience when I do. But imagine, in God's economy, both Mary and I are equally loved. We both are part of God's economy in equal measure. It isn't fair from our economy But it is God's sign of abundance. Each worker receives not what they deserve, but receives the same grace, but not for the same work. It gives a lie to our earning of grace and our earning of merit and our earning of love. It puts a lie to the fact that we are somehow all working our way up into God's favor. For God has already given us God's favor. Each receives the same. Some are paid for the whole day and did not work for it, and all the same. So we end up with enough, you see, in God's economy. In fact, more than enough. It's not just the leftover manna that we scrape off and have just enough to eat at the end of the day, but it's God's pouring out of God's deep and present and enduring abundance, who feeds us with grace unlimited, unfettered, and unearned. The fact of the matter is that in God's economy, God's kingdom of heaven, we don't get what we deserve. Thank God. And we are set free then to give ourselves away to victims of a hurricane in the south, or earthquake in Mexico, or the starving people in our own midst. Not to earn God's grace, but because in God's economy we already have all that we need. So what would you choose? Merit or grace? Amen.